Well, it's that season again. In the stores, it was that season, Christmas season. You know, it started in August, right? As you go everywhere and you start to see wrapping paper and ribbons and other things showing up. If you're like me, I mean, we live in the home of Costco, right? This is where Costco was born. How many of you go to Costco? Raise your hand. How many of you send someone else? Okay. Yeah. yeah, I don't mind going to Costco. My wife could do without it all day long. She's like, no thanks. I'm like, ooh, samples, you know, stuff I don't need, things like that, right? But if you are a Costco member, you went to church, it is church for some. You go to Costco and they send you the Costco Connection, like, publication. You guys know what I'm talking about? And it's like a big booklet. It's basically their version. Instead, like when I grew up, you had the Sears catalog and the JCPenney's catalog, and they were like that thick, right? And they gave it to you like once a year or whatever. And my brother and I, we'd go through it. They had like the Christmas section, and we'd be like, oh, what? And you'd circle everything that you wanted for Christmas, hoping that mom and dad would look at it, right? I think we started initialing it later. But Costco is a genius. They've made it smaller, bite-sized, and they send it more often, like every month, right? There's a strategy there. So I got the Costco Connection thing, and I was just looking at it this morning, actually, because I woke up real early, and I got the coffee on, and I sat down to drink my cup of coffee, and I look at the end table, and I see the Costco Connection there, and it said something like, the holiday season made easy, right? And it's like, the implication is that the holiday season is not easy, right? That it's super busy, that it's really stressful. And that's actually quite true, isn't it? Like, we love parties, we love getting together and doing all this stuff, but then at the end, we're waiting for the end of it too. So it's kind of like we can relax and take a deep breath and go, okay, I'm glad that's done, you know? Because people are stressed, and people are anxious, and people are overburdened, and they're overcommitted. Just go to any little league game or soccer game or peewee football game and start talking to parents. Amen, parents? And you're like, how many things am I doing this week? What's my calendar look like? And communication is key. My wife and I are always talking about, like, did you put that on the calendar? We need to really, like, hype up our communication, because if we don't, we're both going to miss something, right? And we only have two kids, and some people have way more kids, and they're all involved in activities. And it's not just if you have kids, there's all kinds of things going on. And then there's work, right? How much do you work during the week? And how much vacation do you get? And that kind of stuff. And what I want you to understand here is that Jesus cares about these things. He cares deeply about these things. He cares deeply about us as human beings and whether or not we are getting enough rest, whether or not we are able to be fully present in the moment, you know? One of the most common answers I receive when I ask someone how they're doing, can you guess what it is? How you doing?
Fine.
Fine. What's the next one?
How are you?
How are you? There's another one, though. I'm tired. I'm tired. How many of you are guilty of saying this? Now, I'm not trying to throw guilt at you, but seriously, probably 8 times out of 10, that's in the first two responses. I'm fine. I'm tired. I'm fine. You know, type of thing. I'm tired. And it's a worldwide problem. In some places, it's worse than others. And it's becoming more and more of a problem. For example, in Japan, there's a word called karoshi. How many of you have heard of this word, karoshi? Death by overwork. This was a term that was coined back in the 70s, and then it gained extreme, rapid, wide acceptance and usage in the 90s after the Japanese stocks tanked, and they started referring to it all the time because people were dying, literally dying from overwork, either from heart attacks or stress, coronary reasons, or by suicide or attempted suicide. And it became a very serious problem. So much so that it's still a problem. Like, even by naming it, the problem has not gone away. So last year, There was a filmmaker named Allegra Pachenko, and she went to Japan to film this phenomenon and to take pictures of it, and she was just overcome by it. So much so that, like, she's walking the streets, and there are these guys, most of her pictures are of men. They work like a 13, 14-hour day, and they just get out of work, they try to eat, and then they opt to just go to sleep on the curb or on a bench or in a corner or in a hallway. And she was so amazed by this that she was like, I need to make this a more profound statement. So when you watch a murder mystery show, right, and they find the body and they cordon off everything, right? And then when they take the body away, what do? They outline it, right? They outline it. So look at what she did. I'm going to show you the next slide. First, she finds these guys. He's not dead. He's asleep. He's completely exhausted. Let's go to the next one. Let's go to the next one. The guy is asleep. Let's go to the next one. This is what she started to do. Now, some people were really offended by this, right? Like, how could you do that, you know, type of thing. But she's making a point. Let's go to the next one. The next one. The next one. And again. And again. And again. Yeah. She's decided to use these chalk outlines and put them around these men who had worked themselves to the point of exhaustion, giving us a stark reminder that this type of life, that she calls them salary men, this type of life where you're just working all the time. We, you know, we have this phrase, right? All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Well, it also kills you. I mean, literally, you're basically the walking dead, or you're on your way to death. These photos remind me of a quote I heard once that says, the things that matter most in life are often hostage to the things that matter least. So you're working so that you can have the things you want or have the life that you want, but your life is actually hostage to working and you're not getting what you actually want. Does that make sense? You're not living the way you actually want to. And the things that matter the most to you, like your family, your spouse, your kids, enjoying a day, enjoying a sunrise or a sunset or a good meal, you don't have time to do it. Like those guys literally falling asleep as they eat. And I need a reminder of this, because my answer quite often when somebody asks me how I'm doing is, I'm good. I'm a little tired. I say the same thing, right? Because it's tempting to just try harder when it feels like nothing's happening or you're not getting the result that you want. But Jesus, what I want you to see today is that Jesus shows us that growth starts with rest. It starts with abiding. I want you to imagine on the night, we're going to celebrate communion in a minute, but on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he got together with his disciples and they were in Jerusalem in a section of the city, on the south side of the city to be exact, and they're in the upper room celebrating along with all the other hundreds of thousands of Jewish people who were there to celebrate the Passover, the meal that's in remembrance of what God did for the Hebrew nation in rescuing them from Egypt. Okay, something they would do every year. So every time we eat this meal, that's the background, right? Rescue. Rescue is the background. And after that meal, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John give different accounts of this, but after that meal, they walk through the city, past the temple, and the geography is such that they go through the city, past the temple, outside of the city, okay, to the Mount of Olives. Okay? And if you do that, if you walk past the temple, The accounts that we have from historians of that day, Josephus for one, are that there is a giant golden frieze, like a big mold of gold that's shaped like a vine. And some artist renditions are like it's just a big, giant kind of shield-looking thing. Other artist renditions show that these golden vines are draped all the way across the big overarching entrance and then down the columns on the side. It's massive. They would have walked right by that. And it's a symbol of God's people who are planted by God Himself in the promised Holy Land. This agricultural reminder of a land flowing with milk and honey and wine, and that God has given it to them. And they're walking out at night, so you can imagine everything is lit by firelight, and it's reflecting off this gold. And He has just come, according to John's version of the gospel, He has just gone through this meal, and He has declared to them in John 15, there's this vine that they're all saying God's provision has been given. His promises have been fulfilled. And He says to them, I am the true vine. I am the true vine. If you turn to John 15, it says this, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, He prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. So Jesus says that His disciples, and by the way, that's us as well. We are to be His disciples. His disciples are the branches that grow out of the vine. Okay, so you imagine a vine. This is commonly called the vine stalk or the trunk. And the branches grow out from it. Once the fruit is harvested, the branches are pruned back. You catch that? After you harvest the fruit, all of the branches are pruned back after you harvest the fruit. And those branches that have not borne fruit are cut off completely and they throw them away into the fire. And the ones that have borne fruit are pruned right back to the edge of the vine stalk. And so what Jesus' followers would have heard, His first disciples would have heard here, is that every other year in that culture was called an abiding year. So that when you had your vineyard, You would let the branches remain on the central vine stalk or the trunk for 1 year. And the next year, you wouldn't. You would prune them back. And those vines remained in the vine stalk. Okay? And for that year, you wouldn't let them grow or produce fruit. So that the next year, you let those branches grow out of the vine stalk and they're thicker and they're bigger and they're stronger. And the fruit they produce produces more, and it produces for longer, and it's sweeter, okay? That is the agricultural picture that Jesus is giving here to His disciples, okay? So the vine stalk, as all trunks of trees do, it grows thicker year after year, right? You've seen a trunk cut, and you can count the rings. Every year it grows thicker. Same thing for a vine stalk, okay? So it grows thicker year on year, surrounding the pruned back branches from which they will grow out again, and they're stronger, and they're able to bear more fruit than the year before. So there's a rhythm. I'm going to put this up on the screen for you. There's a rhythm of remaining or abiding in the vine, and then growth from that remaining, and then fruit is produced, and then after that, you prune. So commonly we read this, and then when you talk about it or somebody references it, or even if you just think about it, what we think is, well, if you're not producing, you get pruned, right? Correct? If you're not producing, you get pruned. But what does the text say? If you are producing, you get pruned. Either way, what happens? You get pruned. Either way, you get pruned. And here's the point Jesus is making. We should expect this rhythm in our lives. We want to produce fruit, then we need to be pruned. If we're not producing fruit, you're going to get pruned as well. Does that make sense? So Jesus is saying we should learn to recognize points where abiding turns to growth and where growth turns to fruit. And then from fruitfulness, it's going to turn to pruning. And it's best if you don't fight against the gardener, right? It's best if you go along with the gardener. He says, who's the gardener? His Father, rather than resist him. So as we spend time with Jesus in the hidden places where no one sees in your life, in time, we will become aware that our faith is producing a particular fruit in our life. Maybe that's patience, perhaps, or self-discipline, or joy. Like, you just find yourself being less angry, or less mad, and more happy, more deeply joyful. And then we experience a season of fruitfulness. We demonstrate a patience that we had not known before. But then, just as we are enjoying this new experience, something happens. We stop bearing fruit. We might even notice that the fruit we were bearing, we no longer are bearing it, and we seem to be more impatient again. And when that's the case, Jesus is saying, it's time for you to rest. It's time for you to abide. It's time for you to go back and pray. It's time for you to just do those disciplines where you stop so that you can be pruned, so that you can go back to growing again. And you can go back to producing fruit. If we don't know to expect this, if we don't see Jesus' words here as a gentle invitation to abiding again, it's the idea of, in order to move forward, you actually have to retreat sometimes. You have to retreat, assess the situation, and then take the battlefield again. If we don't know to expect this, then we're going to worry that something has gone wrong, or that God has left us alone, or let us down, or that we have let Him down. Maybe He's abandoned us, or something like that. If we don't know to expect this, we're going to say, well, I'm not being fruitful anymore, so God must not be with me. And it's really an invitation from Jesus to go, pay attention. Pay attention to your life. What is going on? Here are the facts. Facts means facts, by the way. It is unpruned branches that grow too thin to support the weight of fruit. Let it sink in. Unpruned branches grow too thin to support the weight of the fruit. They become too long. They just keep growing. Imagine if the vineyard gardener let that vineyard just grow every year and never pruned it back. The branches just get really, really long and long, and the longer they are towards the ends, they get thinner. And what happens is the goodness that's in the vine has trouble getting all the way down to the end, right? So the fruit doesn't grow there, or it doesn't grow as much, or it's a little tiny cluster, that kind of thing. The life that doesn't embrace this rhythm is going to see a law of diminishing returns. If you don't know how to turn it off, if you don't know how to rest, there's this law of diminishing returns, bearing increasingly less fruit and increasingly bitter fruit, by the way. On the other hand, the life that embraces this rhythm is going to bear a lot of fruit in season. In season. Okay? Now, I want to show you an image that explains what Jesus is saying. It's a semicircle, so I'm going to put this up here for you. And it shows abiding on the left and fruitfulness on the right. But you see that there's two other things in there, pruning and growing. And I want you to imagine this as a pendulum. If you want to get to fruitfulness, if you want to go to fruitfulness, then you need to start with abiding. And there's growing and there's pruning that happen as well. Now, while good work, we're supposed to do good work. If you're a follower of Jesus, if you're supposed to do good work, it means be fruitful and multiply. That's a promise that was given to Adam at the beginning of creation. We're also meant to have rest, which is also at the beginning in the creation story. In fact, the day after God created humans, day six, he took a rest. He took a rest on that day, which is really interesting, right? I went to coffee with a high schooler this last week down at Uptown. And he was like, seriously, if God is all-knowing, all-powerful, all-omnipotent and all that, why in the heck did he have to take a rest? Good question. Maybe he's modeling something for us? So the day after God creates humans, day six, he took a rest. And that means for Adam and Eve, their first day of existence was a rest day. And then after that, he says, get to work. Get to work after that. It was on their second day that they began to work. So like them, there's this concept of, we see from the very beginning, work from our rest, not rest from our work. Rest first, then do the work. You might say that's semantics. Well, I beg to differ. I've been working on this for a number of years, and it takes some work to work on resting. Let me tell you, rest is so important that it was one of the 10 great commandments, right? Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. God puts rest on par with not murdering and not stealing. It's as important. Rest. So, John 15 says again, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes it so that it will be even more fruitful. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I'm the vine, you are the branches. If man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he's like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire and burned. And if you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be given to you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. So he basically is saying this abiding rhythm, this resting rhythm where you wait so that you can grow, so that you can be fruitful and then expect to be pruned again. This is part of showing yourself to be his disciple. Okay, so that semicircle represents this pendulum that swings back and forth between abiding to fruitfulness and back. And while we use abiding and fruitfulness as the main metaphors of this, there are a lot of other word pictures that describe it as well. Like on abiding side, you could have rest or cultivating or sitting and dwelling in your relationship with God in the abiding side. On the other side would be fruitfulness could just be work, multiplication, that kind of stuff. So I want you to see that we see this in Jesus' life as well. He's not just saying for them to do this, but we know from Scripture, from the accounts of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, at various times Jesus goes off to be alone with his Father. He takes time away from his own disciples to rest, to be plugged back in. In fact, he started, going back to that metaphor of Adam and Eve resting on their first day of existence and then working. Before Jesus starts his work, before he starts his ministry, he goes off in the desert to be alone with God, with a time of abiding in the desert. And then he continued that pattern of rest and work, rest and work. We, on the other hand, we tend not to start from rest, but we launch right into whatever it is we're doing. And then we rest only when we burn out, right? Only when we burn out. Between abiding and fruitfulness, however, on that pendulum are these two other seasons of pruning and growing. When we abide in God, He begins to change us and we begin to experience growth. And growth is often very exciting, right? When you feel like you're growing in Jesus, as is the common term that we use. I feel like I'm growing in my faith. I feel like I'm growing in God. It's often exciting. It's often encouraging. And we savor that transition from abiding to fruitfulness. And before we know it, we're doing the things that God has put on our heart to do, and He's growing our hearts. But like a pendulum, we need to swing back. And we cannot spend too much time doing. Why? Because abiding is what powers fruitfulness. That's what Jesus is saying to us. Abiding is what powers fruitfulness. It's like your device. You plug it in every night and you let it rest, hopefully. Right? And it gets recharged so that it can do its work. Does that make sense? Abiding with God is what powers fruitfulness. And so at some point in time, we begin to move back towards abiding on that pendulum. Often, it's not us that initiates that move. Something gives us a clue that we need to do that. Because we like our times of fruitfulness, but then somebody comes along and says, you're just like doing this and you're getting the same result and it's really not improving. Maybe you need to take a break. And as Westerners, not cowboys, but as Westerners in the West, in the United States, okay, first world country, we would not say we're Westerners if we're in England, but even the first world countries of Europe are like this. We love getting things done. We love it. We're addicted to it. We love getting things done. Why would we want to leave something that we're getting done to go abide and do nothing, right? Why would we want to do that? Therefore, more often than not, we have to kind of be nudged in that direction. We have to be pruned. And it's painful sometimes when we have to be pruned that way. But if we listen, we're going to see God moving in time. He'll move us into this abiding place so that we can be fruitful again. So I want to put the rhythm up there for you again. Again, this is what Jesus' hearers, they would have known about this abiding year and the fruitful year, okay? The rhythm is abiding, growing, fruitfulness, and then pruning, okay? Likewise, you can switch the growing and the pruning. They can be in the middle because if you aren't producing any fruit, it might mean that you need to get really pruned up and some stuff thrown into the fire before you can start producing fruit. So abiding means resting, being in the Father's presence. It means being, not doing. Okay? Growing, it's not an end in and of itself, but it's an essential part of being healthy. Fruitfulness or productivity. An important aspect of being fruitful for a believer in Christ is making more disciples. If you have not made a disciple in a while, there's probably some abiding to do so that you can be fruitful again, or maybe for the first time. And then there's pruning. Prayerfully reducing. Here, I'm going to make it really practical for you. Pruning, more often than not for us as Westerners in the United States, means being very prayerful about reducing our commitments. Reducing our commitments. Creating new space in our lives. Cutting back stuff that has outlived its time or which needs to lie fallow for a while. Without pruning and abiding, we can't expect much growth or fruitfulness because our culture is highly resistant to this because we want all work and no rest. But what we see here is God's pattern, and it shows us that true fruitfulness only comes and the rhythm of life that's expressed in abiding and then being fruitful. I want you to look in your program, the page that's blank that we leave there for notes for you if you are so inclined. And at the bottom of that page, it says a little phrase, because we as a church at West Seattle Christian, as a group of people that are practicing the way of Jesus together and learning how to do that better, and it takes time to learn how to do that better. We've defined discipleship as being with Jesus to learn from Jesus how to be like Jesus so that we can do the things he did for the reasons that he did them. And Jesus here in John 15 says that this is the fundamental rhythm that the vine is supposed to have. Connection to Jesus, abiding in him, is vital. Connection to Jesus is vital. That part where it says being with him, to learn from him, how to be like him, means you actually have to take stuff out of your schedule and put some time into your schedule, not just Sunday morning, so that you can learn from him how to be like him. Whether that means opening your Bible intentionally for the first time and reading it, or whether it means getting together with some other Christians to learn about Jesus and have serious discussion about the practices you can put into your life, not just the beliefs you can put into your head, but the practices you can put into your life. And by the way, I'm available for that. Any one of our elders and their wives are probably available for that to help you learn how to do that. Here's what I want you to see. Abiding time is way over here. Fruitful time is way over here. Abiding time is not fruitful time. It's a very simple sentence. It's not a trick sentence. Abiding time is not fruitful time. It's not fruiting time. If you don't have any abiding time, then you can't produce fruit. And we are called to produce a lot of fruit. We are called to do that. But we can't do it unless we remain and abide. The fundamental revelation Jesus is bringing to us is that we are created to do work. We are created to do work, but to work from a place of rest. We work out of a place of rest instead of work, 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 and then recover. Right? And then recover. I want to say it a different way. The fundamental thing for American Christians is the recognition that we are not called to bear fruit all the time. We are not. We probably get nervous about that left side of the diagram. We get nervous about it. To let the pendulum swing all the way over to resting, to just stopping, to disengaging from doing anything. And we try to cheat a little bit. We try to keep the pendulum a little bit to the right, not all the way to the left. I'll give you a very practical example. I know that my life, my family's life, my work, my sense of well-being, my sense of actually having accomplished anything suffers dramatically if I don't have any time each morning to read at least a little bit of my Bible and then read another book that has to do with the Bible. If I don't do that for days or for weeks, and there have been times like that where I don't get any of that time to do that because there's so much to do. And eventually, I feel like I'm doing everything for nothing. Going back to that quote at the beginning where the things that matter most are hijacked by the things that matter least, right? The picture I often put in front of our elder team is when we are doing work as a church and when we're deciding how we're going to do what pieces of work that we want to do in our community, right? The temptation is to just do everything or do as much as possible. But often when you do that, the metaphor I give them is we're running on a treadmill. We're running in place and we're getting nowhere. Okay? Metaphors break down, by the way. You might say, well, if I keep running on a treadmill, I'll get healthier. Yes and no. Metaphors break down. But you see what I'm getting at. You're not going anywhere. It feels like you're doing something, but it's not producing the result that you're trying to get in terms of what we are doing as a church. Again, it's about being. Who are we being as a church before what we're doing? We try to cheat on this all the time. If we kept the needle all the way over at fruitful, at producing, it's usually a disaster. If you just keep doing that, you're going to end up like a salary man, like a Karoshi guy outlined in chalk, lying on the floor. Because if you keep the needle dialed all the way there, that's where breakdowns happen. And that's where affairs happen. And that's where addictions happen. Because you're trying to do it all on your own. And you're not remaining in Jesus. In Jesus. Okay? And if it's not one of those things, one of those extreme examples that I just said, if we don't ever rest, if we don't go on vacation, if we don't recover, if all we do is just keep recuperating, the fruit that we bear doesn't have the life that it once has, right? It's not as sweet. It actually turns bitter. And it's because it's the result of our human ability, not of what God can do if we just join Him and what He's doing. And the problem is you can't figure out what He's doing if you don't stop and look around for a while. Right? Which is my translation of Ferris Bueller's famous quote. And if you don't know that, I'm going to give you the assignment of going and watching that. Okay? There's good news in there. There's good news in there. God takes this stuff very seriously, guys and gals. He takes it very seriously. It's in the Ten Commandments. Okay? In the same list that includes coveting and stealing and murder and adultery, in that list, I already said, God puts honor the Sabbath. It made God's top 10, is another way of saying it. You want to be like me, do this. Right? And it's very counterintuitive to today's culture. My wife, Beth, she keeps encouraging me to preach a sermon series one day entitled, I didn't say that, quote, Jesus. And it's all about the things that we attribute to Jesus, the things that we say that He said that He didn't say. Things like, I won't give you more than you can handle. Let's put that one up there. I won't give you more than you can handle. Do we have that one? Did I put that one in there? You guys have all heard this, right? Somebody's told you He won't give you more than you can handle. Bull. Total bull. It's not in here. If you want to argue with me about that, you can try. But it's not in there. Here's another one. If you're not growing, you're dying. I didn't say that. Jesus. He didn't say that. He doesn't say you have to be always growing all the time. He never says it, not once. Jesus says, if you want to be fruitful, you get pruned. You get pruned. There's an Anglican priest that I've listened to his podcast several times, and he's been at a conference that I went to. His name's Todd Hunter. And he said this phrase, this mentality that we have as Westerners is this, nothing good is going to happen today unless I make it happen. Nothing good is going to happen in my work. Nothing good is going to happen in my family. Nothing good is going to happen in my ministry unless I make it happen. And then he goes on to say, that is a fundamentally atheistic phrase. You're saying I can do it without God. It's an atheistic phrase. What I want you to see, putting this all together, go back to those images of the Karoshi salarymen outlined in chalk. Not resting for your life physically and for your spiritual growth, your spiritual life, your spiritual formation. Not resting, form of suicide. It is. It's a form of suicide. We need these rhythms that we've been talking about on a yearly cycle. It needs to be long enough. You need to actually sit down in advance and not plan your vacation last minute. You need to plan it and plan it well so that you can enjoy it and that so that it incorporates the things that give you life. We need weekly rhythms, 24 hours per week where we disengage from work. You need daily rhythms. You need to get off your cell phone. How many more news bites are you going to have to hear or read that tell you it's not good for you or your kids? Why all of the developers of our screens that we're walking around looking at don't let their own families use the devices? Okay? You need to turn off the computer. You need to turn off the TV. You need to make some time for prayer and scripture. I know that sounds like, oh, you just gave me the rules. I didn't come back to church to hear that crap again. But it's about abiding. It's about remaining in Jesus. So here are the questions I want to leave you with. I like to wrap it up with questions and not give you all the nitty-gritty ways that you can apply this. What is rest and abiding for you? One way to think about that is, what gives you energy? What gives you life? Do that. Do that. We have this term, recreation. Break it up. What recreates you? What recreates you? Spend some time being in that place, in that spot to do that. What is going to connect you to God? I'm not going to pretend that I know you well enough that I can tell you what reconnects you to God, because we're all different. Obviously, we have some similarities because we're human, but maybe for some of you, the one that I often tell, and I've shared this with some of you individually in here, when I was a college pastor for a college group at a much really big church back in Idaho, I would sit down frequently with college students, and they were like, how do I grow? How do I become more like Jesus? And I would listen to their, I'd be like, tell me about your life. And I'd say, you know, the first thing you need to do is you need to go to sleep on time and go to sleep and rest. That's why Eugene Peterson, who just passed away this last week, a pastor to pastors, he would say, I go to sleep because it's an act of faith that God is going to run things while I'm not awake. You know, you have to, maybe your Sabbath is literally just making sure that you go to sleep on time over and over and over again so that you can be with God and remain in Him. Ultimately, our exterior life should match our interior life. And if they don't match, eventually we're going to crash and we're not going to bear fruit that we're called to bear. So what I'm calling you to recognize, because Jesus points this out to us in this passage of Scripture, John 15. He says that the abiding season is just as important as the fruiting season. Take a minute to let that sink in. What is God saying to you about this? Take a minute and think about it. Close your eyes if you need to. What is God saying to you about this? I encourage you to write down anything, if something came to you, write it down in your notes. As you're writing that down, or if you're thinking about it a little bit more, the Passover that Jesus and his disciples were celebrating was a time where everyone who was Jewish in their culture and in their community, they just stopped. They stopped what they were doing. There were Jewish communities all over the Mediterranean world, and they would all make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, if they could, to celebrate Passover in Jerusalem, a Mecca, if you will, to come to Jerusalem. And at this meal, as I said before, they would stop and they would sit down, and this meal would take place at a triclinium, and there would be like tables laid out in kind of a U shape, horseshoe shape, and all of the guests would sit around this table, And they would celebrate by eating a meal that all the different things they ate symbolized all the different parts of the story of the Exodus. All of the plagues and all of the things God did on their journey out of Egypt were represented in that meal, the point of which was God is leading you to a new life. And for centuries after that, the Jewish community would meet at the time of Passover. They would stop everything they were doing and they would remember. And they would remember who they were, God's people. And that is the point. Jesus is calling us to remember who we are in Him, because of Him, and through Him in our lives.